That's sort of from Perek Hei Pasuk Aleph. David Musa l'kim asau. So Zacharu nekeva b'ra'am, and man and female was created by Varach Husam and bless them by Yikra Shema Adam, called their name Adam b'yom hi baram, on the day that he was created. So learned out from there is just as man created the Beis Hillel Paskins in the Mishnah in Maseches Yevamos, just as God created a man and a woman, so too the mitzvah incumbent upon man is to parallel the actions of God and to have a boy and a girl. Right, so that is the mitzvah of Puravu, right? To have for the man to have over the course of his lifetime a boy and a girl. Right, so that seems simple enough. Right, so what could there possibly be to talk about for the mitzvah of Puravu? Sounds like a pretty simple thing. Well, philosophically, it is just a very difficult thing to understand. What exactly is the mitzvah? How does a man do the mitzvah of Puravu? What is the act, right? Every in order to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah, you eat matzah. In order to hear the mitzvah of hearing the shofar, you listen to the shofar, right? You put on tefillin, right? What is the mitzvah of having of Puravu on the man? Thoughts? Right, but when do we say, you fulfilled the mitzvah of Puravu? Shkayach, you fulfilled the mitzvah of Puravu. So the obvious first step is to say, well, how does a man take part in the having of the children? Well, he has relations with a woman, right? And therefore gives birth, and eventually she has a boy and a girl, and that's when you, so when do you fulfill the mitzvah? When you have the boy and the girl? When you have relations? How do you know at that point, right, when you did that time, when you had relations that time that conceived the child, is that when you fulfilled the mitzvah? What?
It can't be because
you don't know.
You're not going to have a boy and a girl always.
And you're also not going to always have a boy and a girl, right? So how do you define this? This is a tough one. So the Minchas Chinuch, in his description of the mitzvah, so the Minchas Chinuch is written by Rabbeinu Yosef Babad, who was he wrote it kind of as a commentary, although it's not really a commentary, it's more of an expansion on the Sefer HaChinuch. Who wrote the Sefer HaChinuch? It's okay, I don't know either. Nobody knows who wrote the Sefer HaChinuch. Presumably, the story goes that he wrote it for like his own children, like to learn on Shabbat afternoon with his kids. We just don't know what his name was. But the commentary on them is the Minchas Chinuch. Buying a store of Sefer HaChinuch, it generally will only be the Sefer HaChinuch when you buy a store of Minchas Chinuch, so it contains in the middle the mitzvah, and then his commentary is explaining all over the side. So the mitzvahs are following the minyan ha-mitzvahs of the Rambam, meaning that there's not pure agreement as to what the 630, there's very much disagreement as to what the 630 mitzvahs are, but he followed the counting of the Rambam, and instead of when the Rambam listed his mitzvahs, he listed them in the order that he felt like them, probably some kind of order of importance. I mean, he started with the Munah and Hashem and then moved on to things like that. But he just did it in following the order of the Parsha. So the first mitzvah is the mitzvah of Puravu, and he raises this question as to when are you fulfilling the mitzvah. So then he jumps in and says, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, the following halacha. And how does this assume this into the equation? Right, a man has a boy and a girl. Right, a man has two boys, two girls. Everything's wonderful. Right, and then his two sons died. Right, and he's still alive. Right. So what happened to his mitzvah of Puravu? So we pass him Shulchan Aruch. This is, by the way, Simon Aleph in Evan Ezer, in the section of Evan Ezer Shulchan Aruch. This is the first thing off the bat. Shulchan Aruch Paskins, he has not fulfilled his mitzvah of Puravu. It's a little bit odd. Wait a second. He was Yotzei, and now it was taken away from him. Right? That seems to be what the Minchas Chinuch says. However, what about the following? Let's say a man has has a boy, he has a girl, and then that boy and that girl both have children, and then his boy and his girl, or his boy dies. Right? So what about that? So he actually has fulfilled his mitzvah, because his son is now living on through his children already, so that mitzvah is fulfilled by the parent. Right? So that's It's just odd. I can't think of another mitzvah that is comparable to it. The mitzvah Shemitah, in fact, has the following line. He says, "V'inei l'fima d'kaimelon," according to what we assume, "hayu lo banim umesu," that if you have sons and they died, lo kaima mitzvah, you haven't filled the mitzvah. Right? Nira ba'alil de mitzvah zu ain a kashar mitzvah. So it seems clearly that this mitzvah is not like other mitzvahs. Lula v'matzah v'domein, like lula v'matzah. Right, the ein lahem meshach zman rak tekev sha'asa hamitzvah yatsa. Right, because they don't have a period of time. Right, as soon as you do the mitzvah, you're done. Right, the mitzvah is over. Aval kan enokin. That's not the case here. The habia lo have gufa mitzvah rak hechsher mitzvah. Because the act of relations is not the act of the mitzvah; it is rather a preparation for a mitzvah. The ikra mitzvah he laid the sabanim, right? The main mitzvah is having the children. Uvuchol rega chal alav hachiyav, and then every moment you have the obligation. V'meis lo kai mikanu lava. So it's like an ongoing mitzvah. So he's saying it's like having a bris, right? There's a bris is the idea. There's the action of the bris, and then there is the act of or the state of being brist, right? So that's how you live the rest of one's life. So here, there is the act of puravu, and then there is the mitzvah puravu, which is fulfilled so long as you have two children. If the two children are no longer in existence anymore, right? So then you go back to not being in fulfillment of that mitzvah. That is the statement of the Mincha Seinach. Yes?
The other issue is really, most of the other mitzvah, a lot of the other mitzvah, you can have the intent and you can do the mitzvah. Having boy and a girl is not in your You can't, all right, I'm going to do this mitzvah, you know?
Well, it's not until the year, 2000, we're in the year 2015. It's a little bit more in your power now than it ever was.
To have a boy and a girl?
Yes. We will get to you shortly. I know there's only a half hour share, but I'd like to, you'll get to the concept of pre-implantation, the efficacy and ethics of pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. Let's say, what? That's what you have to do? Right? You know how much that costs? Right? I mean, it's less than a year's tuition, probably. It's about a year's tuition, depending on where you go. All right, so hold on. We're just setting the groundwork, right? So the Mincha Seinach says that this is a very unusual mitzvah. Every other mitzvah, you do it, and you're yotze, and kvartik, and you move on, right? This mitzvah is a state of being. Right? Are you in a state of having fulfilled the mitzvah of puravu? So much so that he raises the following. He uses this to answer the following question in section Ches in the Mincha Seinach, this mitzvah Aleph in section Ches. He asks the following: let's say you give birth to a mamzer. Right? What is a mamzer? Right? A mamzer is a child, right, born from a prohibited marriage. Right? So a man has an affair with a woman. Right? A woman is. It's not the man's affair, that's irrelevant, but it's the woman's affair. The woman is married, and the man has relations with her, they have a child, right? That child is called the mamzer, right? So have you fulfilled the mitzvah of puravu by having two mamzers? So let's start with the following case, right? It is sometimes permissible to have children that are mamzers, right? A mamzer is allowed to get married. Who's a mamzer allowed to marry? He's allowed to marry a mamzer, or she's allowed to marry a mamzer. Not only that, they're also allowed to marry geirim. The geirim are permitted to marry mamzerim. There's a whole concept, there's a Mishnah in Yevamos that discusses the idea of kitzim mitarim mamzerim, because maybe there's a way of, whatever, not for now. There is time that a child will be born. That child will be a mamzer, but it was born in a permissible way, right? So they did the correct thing. They had children. The child just happens to be a mamzer, right? Is that case a case of, have you fulfilled the mitzvah in that case? Right? Mamzer marries a mamzer. That's sort of what they're supposed to do, sort of, right? And they have a child that's a mamzer. If you fulfilled the mitzvah, Mincha Seinach says, for sure. What about if you had a prohibited marriage and married the mamzer? Have you fulfilled the mitzvah? The Mincha Seinach says, yes, right? Man has relations with a married woman that is not married to him, right? And that child, and they have a child. That child may be a mamzer, but he has fulfilled his mitzvah puravu. Asks the Mincha Seinach, said, "Yeah, I've had this kasha for a while, right? Vezez man kavir hikshiti. I asked a long time ago, right? Okay, so maybe I fulfilled mitzvah puravu. Isn't that a violation of a concept that we call mitzvah haba biavera?" Right, there is a concept in halacha, right? If I take a stolen lulav, the classic case is a stolen lulav, a stolen esrog on sukkahs, right? Have I been yotzei my mitzvah? No. Why not? It's a mitzvah above the aveira. It's a mitzvah that comes directly from a prohibition. So have I fulfilled a mitzvah of puravu by having a child if the cohabitation was a prohibition was prohibited? The Chassidus says yes. Right? Why is it that if I shake a stolen esrog, shake a stolen lulav, I have not fulfilled my mitzvah, but if I have a child in a prohibited manner, I have fulfilled the mitzvah of puravu? He says, because when it comes to the mitzvah of lulav and esrog, I fulfill the mitzvah at the same time that I do the action. If that's the case, then it's a mitzvah haba b'aveir. It's a mitzvah that is coming out of a prohibition. He says, however, when it comes to having puravu, the mitzvah is not the act of having children, the act of cohabitation. The mitzvah is having the children, right? So when I did the prohibition years ago, I've already done tshuva on that, right? But now the child is alive, so I'm fulfilling the mitzvah by dint of the fact that the child is alive. Okay? That is the words of the Midrash.
Could you say
It was only a mitzvah on day one of owning. That's a sukkah kasha. Again, in the beginning of Perek Lulav HaGazel and the third Perek of Sukkah. But they point out the fact that you do own it. You do. If a person was miyayish, the Gemara raises that issue and it talks about, let's say, well, the owner was miyayish. The owner gave up on getting it. So you do own it. You stole it and you own it. Right? Okay. So Rav Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva, Evan Ezer Chelek Beis Simen Yud Ches, asks the following shayla. He says, you have the following issue. Let's say a woman is ovulating early, right? In the world of Hilchos Nidan, the laws of Mikvos. So what happens? So a woman has her period. She has to wait until she stops bleeding, or a minimum of 5 days, or until she stops bleeding, whichever one happens last. And then she's required to wait 7 clean days before she goes to the mikvah. Right? So that generally works well with a woman's ovulation, because that woman ovulates around 14 or 15 of her cycle. Right? So usually when she goes to the mikvah, she's usually ovulating in the next 48 hours. Right? And that's and children will be born and everything's wonderful. Right? What happens in the case when a woman ovulates early? Something called orthodox infertility. She's ovulated, it's actually called that. Right, orthodox infertility, because it affects the orthodox community. Right, a woman is ovulating on day 12, day 13, right, and she's not able, and by the time she goes to the mikvah, the ovulation is done, and therefore they're not able to have children. So what do you do about that? Well, in today's modern age, what do? We give her a couple of pills and make her ovulate 48 hours later. Okay, that's one way of dealing with it. It doesn't always work. What are other ways of dealing with it? So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, well, the idea of waiting 7 clean days maybe only is a din d'rabbanan. Can we negate that? And no. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, you're not allowed to negate that, so you're stuck. So what happens? A woman is ovulating before she goes to the mikvah. What can we do with that? So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, I have a great idea. There's something called artificial insemination, right? You take the husband's zera, take the husband's seed, and you implant it into the wife. Is that okay to do before the woman has gone to the mikvah? Right? Rav Moshe Feinstein says, yeah. Right? The only thing she's not allowed to do before she goes to the mikvah is have relations with her husband. Right? But once she's... But if you inseminate her, so there's no prohibition in that, then very wonderful, the kid will be fine. So then Rav Moshe Feinstein, at towards the end, has the wonders... But have you actually fulfilled your mitzvah of puravu in this way? Right? Have you fulfilled puravu? So according to the Minchas Chinuch, according to what we've said, right? So the question A, which I think we'll assume the answer is affirmative, is there a relationship between a child born between a child and a father if the child was born through artificial insemination? Right, so let's assume yes. I mean, not everybody would agree. That's what I'm saying. That's no relationship, right? But let's assume that there is such a relationship. Has the father fulfilled the mitzvah of puravu if he didn't actually have relations with his wife? Right. So according to the Minchas Chinuch, one would pretty much say yeah. Right. Well, why not? The mitzvah is not. There's no mitzvah of having Bia, there's no ish in mitzvah of having related. The mitzvah is having the children, and assuming they're related, right? He has children, right? So everything is wonderful. Moshe Feinstein says that's an odd thing, because he doesn't think that that's the mitzvah. He disagrees with the Minchas Chinuch. He has to deal with all the proofs of the Minchas Chinuch, but he explicitly says, I think the mitzvah of Puravu is to continually have relations until you have children. And that's what it means in these. The child dies. So okay, that means I'm back to having the obligation of having relations with a woman until I have children, right? So if the mitzvah is having relations in order to have children, so do you fulfill the mitzvah of puravu by artificial insemination? Kasha, right? It's a question. Minchas Chinuch would say yes, or Moshe Feinstein would kind of shrug the shoulders, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that it's usur if you don't fulfill the mitzvah of puravu. But to obligate, let's say the following: a man says, I haven't had any children yet. But we're okay with that, But I have a mitzvah, right? So do I have to fulfill the mitzvah? So do I have to do artificial insemination in order to fulfill the mitzvah? Right. So which point to say maybe probably not. You're probably not obligated to do that. Are you allowed to do it? Yeah, you're allowed to do it. Right, but you're not obligated to do it. Okay, so that's pretty much where we're holding with regards to artificial insemination. I believe most poskim assume that one is not obligated to spend the $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 in order to do artificial insemination. Now, what about the following, though? We have today a lot of nifty tricks that one can do in order to what is artificial insemination, right? You're taking, well, not artificial insemination. Artificial insemination, you just take the man's zera, seed, and you implant it into the woman. You're not usually sifting through seed. But the following, there's something called IVF, in vitro fertilization. What is that? So that's when we take the seed from the man, the zera from the man, and you take the egg from the woman, right? And you mix them together. That's pretty much what you do. You just pour them into the same petri dish, right? As your wife knows, right? You pour it into the same petri dish, and the sperm swims around a little bit, and hopefully we'll fertilize an egg. Sometimes two eggs, three eggs, four eggs, five eggs. Sometimes you'll fertilize a bunch, and you'll throw them all into the woman, and hopefully a bunch of them will stick, and you'll have 1, 2, 3. Hopefully not more than that, children, right? So now you have these fertilized eggs. I believe this is only done with, I don't think this is done with the, although there's a way of doing it with the seed as well, I think. I don't remember if you're doing it with the zera, if you're doing it, check. You could do it with artificial insemination also. Meaning, when it comes to, so what can you do with this fertilized egg? Well, you can, before you implant it back into the woman, you can look at it, and you could say, that's interesting. This one is going to have blonde hair, and this one is going to have brown hair, right? And this one is going to have, blue eyes, this one's going to have green eyes. This one's going to be a boy, and this one is going to be a girl, right? So are you allowed to choose? Take a look and choose which one you want in order to input it back in. That is referred to as pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. So I believe that could be done. I'm not sure. I looked into this 10 years ago. I'm not sure where we're at. I'm sure we've advanced even more than that. But you can do that by looking at the perhaps separating the zera. It could be that X and Y chromosome sperm could be divided up. Right, so can I do that? Can I ensure that the child is going to be a boy, or ensure that the child is going to be a girl? What? Not on Shabbos. You think it's Borer on Shabbos? Okay, you're assuming that there's a good and a bad, right? But is one permitted to do this? So there's a few different. So what do we think?
Yes.
Len says yes. Sam says. Yeah. What do you say? I forgot your name again?
Tamir.
Tamir says?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So there's a few different reasons why a person would want to do this. One reason is they have six girls already and want to have a boy. Right? That's one reason. Another reason might be that they don't have any children yet, But this was in my family. My wife is the youngest of six, and all five of her older siblings, when she was pregnant with Yeshua, all five of our siblings already had children, and none of them had a pidyon aben. Right? Either there was a girl born first, or the boys that were born first were born to Kohanim. Right? So there wasn't a pidyon. She was the sixth kid, the last chance to have a pidyon aben. So there was a lot of pressure. Right? Ultimately, there was a boy. Yeshua was born. He was born, regular. Wasn't a cesarean, so therefore he was. He had a pidyon aben. So let's say the girl comes and says, there's a lot of pressure. Can we maybe manipulate the results a little bit in order to make sure that a boy is born in order to have a pidyon aben? Okay, that's another kasha. Kasha number three, right? What about a? Can you ensure that? Let's say the father has hemophilia, right? Hemophilia only impacts boys and not girls. So can you manipulate it so that they'll only have girls? Right? We won't have to worry about hemophilia. Right? I'm not sure that's really so relevant anymore. What about the following question? Right? You're doing artificial insemination using donor sperm. Right? Using donor sperm. Right? So what happens? And so then there's no relationship to the father. I mean, whether it's permissible at all is a big, big question. And whose sperm you should use, sperm or non-Jew, right? What you should use, that's for totally another time, right? But let's assume you're going to do it, right? So now you have a father, a mother, and there's going to be a child that's only related to the mother, right?
Unless the eggs were donated.
What? It could be related to neither one. But let's assume it's the mother's egg. Let's assume it's the mother's egg. Right, the mother's egg and the mother's carrying, that's fine. It's the husband, he didn't have sperm. Right? So now they're going to have a child. Meanwhile, the father's a Kohen. Right? So if the child that's born is a boy, right, the boy's not going to be a Kohen. Unless you could find some donor Kohen. Right? The boy's not going to be a Kohen. Right? So is that, so everyone's going to wonder, what's the story? Why is the father getting the first aliyah and the boy's not? Right? It's going to be pretty embarrassing. Right? That's another area where it would be where the question would be up there. So in the Sefer Nishmas Avram, written by Dr. Abraham S. Abraham, right? So he wrote a book in Hebrew, a multi-volume book in Hebrew, titled Nishmas Avram, and then he translated a bunch of it into English, very clear, put out by Artscroll. If you're interested in these kinds of things, this is really a great work. So he said that he asked Rav Shlomo Zalman. And they just want the pidyon aben question. They wanted their first child should be a boy. So are you allowed to do that? Is that permissible? So Shlomo Zalman pointed to a Gemara of Brachos. The Gemara of Brachos has a story of Chizkiyah and Yeshayahu. That there's a Gemara that Chizkiyah was the king, Yeshayahu was the Navi, and there was a whole thing that they weren't gonna. There was a question that had to be raised, and neither one was visiting the other one. And the Gemara was like the king said, "I'm the king; he should come to me." And the other one's like, "I'm the Navi; the king should give." Right? And no one's going to say. So ultimately, the Gemara says that Chizkiyah became sick, so therefore Yeshayahu had to go visit Chizkiyah. Right? That's what the Gemara says. So why did Chizkiyah get sick? You ask Yeshayahu, right? He's a Navi. Thanks for coming, Navi. Right? By the way, why am I sick? Why am I in such bad shape? So Yeshayahu says, well, it's because he didn't have children. Chizkiyah responds, why? The reason why I never had children, because I have there's a prophecy that my descendant is going to be the evil king Menashe. Right? And I don't want to have and I figured, we'll avoid that if I don't have children. To which Yeshayahu responded by saying, "Bahadi kifshit rachmana lamalach," which means, "Why are you busying yourself with the dealings of heaven?" Meaning, that's a Kadosh Baruch Hu's kashman. That's not your kashman. Right? Your kashman is to do what you're supposed to do, and God will worry about what God has to do. To which Chizkiyah said, "Really? So, if I have a child, would your daughter marry them? I have a child. You have a child. Could we marry them together?" And I forget what the result of that question was. But that's found in the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Yud Amud Aleph. So the Nishmas Avram says, so it depends. If it's just a non-physics issue, non-physical issue, meaning it's a question of fulfilling the mitzvah kuruvim, it's a mitzvah idea of having a pidyon aben, something along those lines, he says, so then you would apply the idea of v'hadik kivshei derachman olam alach. Like, that's not your business. Your business is not to get yourself involved with these types of things. However, if it's the hemophilia question, perhaps it's the Kohen question. Perhaps it's the Yichud question. There's a question about whether a father has a girl right? And the father, and father's technically not related to the girl. Is he allowed to be have yichud with that girl, right? So that's this whole question with adoptive. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe prohibited adoption on that principle because the child's going to have yichud problems with one of the parents, right? But that is that. So is that? So if it's one of those types of issues, so then he seems like it would be permissible, right? So, and I've heard, this is already, again, I looked into this more in depth years ago, but I've heard that in Arab